Good afternoon, this is Zuby Wilson here on Living on the Edge on KSFR 101.1 FM, broadcasting live on the web at ksfr.org, which is sounding like a broken record, but you can always go to ksfr.org and donate to the station anytime. There's no reason to wait until the fund drive when you're feeling a little bit extra money coming in, or you'll save some money. That's the time to pledge and help support keeping KSFR and Living on the Edge on the air. So I'm flying solo today. Joel Nicholas is off at the master's program celebrating the graduation of his son Zach, who's graduating today at 4 o'clock. So they're in that ceremony now. But today I've got with me in the studio Jan Boyer and Sam Hitt, and we're here to talk a little bit about some of the proposed thinning activities going on in the National Forest. So who wants to give a little background about what's going on up there?
Well, I guess I will, Zuby. Thanks so much for having us. This is a project that's right north of Santa Fe. It's called the Hyde Park Project, right close to Hyde State Park. It's about 2,000 acres. It's roadless land, wilderness quality land. It's been proposed as addition to the Pecos Wilderness on the west side. The Forest Service has been proposing to cut down about 97% of the trees on this area, in this area. There's about 1,200 trees per acre. They want to reduce it down to between 40 and 60 trees per acre since 2005. So we challenged that project back then, and we won that administrative appeal, it's called. It's because they didn't consider the impacts to the wilderness quality of that roadless land. They came back the next year, 2006. We challenged it again. We won again. Then the whole thing went dormant till about 2011. And then they came back again. They did a more detailed environmental analysis. But we heard kind of through the grapevine that the Obama administration back then was not happy about what they were proposing in wilderness quality or roadless land. So the project went dormant. 2 weeks after Donald Trump was elected and installed in the White House, they came back with it again with a vengeance, but this time without any detailed environmental analysis. And instead of just 2,000 acres, they're talking about this is the first project in a series of projects that will encompass 107,000 acres. So all the way from the ski basin down to near Pecos. It's a huge block of land, basically our backyard here in Santa Fe. So that's the background, and the Hyde Park project, the first 2,000 acres of this, was finalized and proposed in March of this year. The cutting will begin in the fall, they say.
So just for perspective, I know when I go hiking up Black Canyon, you get to the very top of the Black Canyon Trail, and there is the beginning of the watershed. Does it come that far?
Yeah. In fact, that's a good way to access it, just the trail that leads out of Black Canyon Campground. Just walk straight up. It's about, it's about a mile or so. You get up to the ridge. And so that would be basically everything down to the river and from the ridge all the way to almost Nun's Corner, as you know. I make that sharp turn there on the Ski Basin Road. So you can look over the ridge and see what has happened in the watershed. It's quite shocking. About 7,000 acres have been, I call it cleared, they call it thinned, but again, it's a huge number of trees, 90% plus, and then those trees are burned as well as all the twigs and branches. So this might be a good time to say we are going to do a tour up there, a walking tour. The weekend after Memorial Day, that's Saturday. Let's escaping me right now, but if you'd like to find out more about it, go to the Santa Fe Forest Coalition website, and there'll be an announcement.
And is that just SantaFeForestCoalition.org or something?
Yes, it is. Okay. Exactly.
SantaFeForestCoalition.org. We'll bring that up again towards the end, and we'll work out exactly what that date is. So,
thanks.
Jan, how did you get involved in this?
Oh, I became concerned about the prescribed burns back in 2005, and I hooked up with Sarah Williams, and the two of us started Once a Forest. And then the following year, we lost Sarah, she died. However, I continued to work on these issues because I was very concerned, number one, about the loss of trees, but also about the scientific data that says all you get when you do these things is more erosion and drying out the soil and making it more flammable, not less, plus all the toxicity issues. So I have a lot of concerns about this. But the main one is that most people don't know about it. And the Forest Service is supposed to move forward with the full involvement of the public, and yet that's not really been happening. So I'm concerned when I talk to people, they say, oh, I thought they were going to just clean up the forest floor. No. Does the public really want 97% of the trees gone from Tasuki to Glorieta? I think they need to think about the current research that says this is not useful. I have a document in front of me from the Physicians for Social Responsibility saying they suggest the Forest Service find other alternatives because prescribed burns are way too toxic. There's a lot of research that says that it's very toxic what they're doing. Not only do we lose the tree's capability to produce oxygen and absorb all the nasty chemistry, including carbon, in holding the carbon. I mean, every tree is a storage tank for carbon. Do you really want to lose that much carbon in the atmosphere? Every acre that you burn of coniferous mixed forest is going to produce almost 5 tons of carbon, which creates an awful lot of carbon dioxide. This is not useful in the current time, so the deforestation that's going on in our backyard is very important to us, to say nothing about the fact that everybody I know is having itchy eyes, sinus problems, pneumonia, asthma, etc., and they all think their bodies are sick. No. The air quality signifier in the newspaper these days, it's probably an average of 87. It used to be 25 every day. It goes up to 110 now. It's been 110, I think, 3 times in the last couple of weeks. That is not healthy. People need to think about, is it worth our health to eat that much smoke, including the flammable ignition items?
Mm-hmm. Now, you're mentioning that this is a Forest Service project. Is there any involvement of Santa Fe City, Santa Fe County? Are they participants in this whole project?
Well, that's a very good question. And yes, they are. The city fire department, they have a wildlands fire crew. They would like to get the contract to do the clearing of the trees. Of course, that'll be an open bidding process, and they'll have to see if they submit the low bid. But yeah, the city is unfortunately behind this. A much better role for our fire department would be to help homeowners remove the flammable vegetation immediately around their home, especially the first 100 feet. That would protect their homes from the most catastrophic, hot, big, windy fire that often now happens in these dry times. So the fire department needs to redirect their efforts to help homeowners protect their property and not go into roadless lands and remove such a large number of the trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I had them on a few weeks ago, and that's mostly what they did talk about, is the critical need and how they can help and support you in what kind of thinning and how to get the trees away from your home and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, it also begs another question, which is people putting their homes in areas that are prone towards a major burn like that. So yeah. So we're moving farther and farther into the forest as we do that. You know, it's a concern for the fire department. What level of responsibility should they take for trying to help people who put their homes in a place that they would have advised against?
And that's a real good point, and that's why we need new zoning regulations to prevent folks from building in these very vulnerable conditions. I mean, we don't let people, in some cases, build right in the floodplains because of the risk of flooding. We should also think the same thing about building homes in dense forests. Mm-hmm. So that is a very important consideration. I mean, we have a very good fire department. They do a great job. They have a national reputation, actually. We should take that expertise and put it to good use, and not focus on these roadless wilderness quality lands, but in the private property around people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the rationale. So the idea here, from the Forest Service or other people involved in this, is that if we don't do, since we are avoiding catastrophic fires, we're trying to cut some of the fuel loading out so that if a fire starts, it won't turn into a crown fire and do the horrible damage. Is this a legitimate way, or are there better ways to limit the fuel loading?
Well, you know, no matter what they do to the forest, they're not going to stop the giant climate-driven fires that we are now experiencing in the Southwest, like the Las Conchas fire, for example. That was a wind-driven fire, incredible dry conditions, and no amount of fuels reduction is going to stop a fire like that. If you accept that what they're doing is going to be effective, it would stop the fires that are actually needed, the small lightning caused fires that burn 5-6 up to 20 acres or so. Those are what our fire adapted forests actually need and are adapted to. So it's what they're proposing is not going to solve the problem that they've identified as the problem. These large, hot crown fires. Yeah.
So are these? Are we working with people who are taking an approach that's just an outmoded bad habit? I see that all the time in a variety of different fields where people are doing some, you know, like tilling farmland instead of doing no-till farming. There's best practices we're learning an awful lot. Are they just not keeping up with the science?
Well, you know, they're narrowing down the science, taking a portion of it and going with that, you know, and it's largely driven by funding. It's the Republican Congress is just throwing money at them to do these fuels reduction projects. And, they have incentives to accomplish certain goals. And when they do, individual foresters rise in the ranks. So, you know, there's a strong incentive to do these projects, and it's unfortunate. There could be a great deal more care given to our forests, but we just don't have the incentives in place to have that happen. And yeah, you're right. It's driven by habit and by custom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the funding is only there for the thinning then, because that's one of the things I've always looked at. I know when there's tree planting after there's been a fire, it's this ludicrous process where people from far outside of our bioregion come in, stick a bunch of tree young seedlings into the ground, and leave.
Yeah,
and it's just like we had some conversation about that in the Green Party years ago, but we need forest managers, people who plant, and we hire local people who will then come back and tend to those trees, invest in their time and energy in helping that forest to recover. And, you know, it's almost just a way of spending and wasting resources when you do it the way that we historically have.
Well, closing roads, replanting and riparian areas along streams, reintroducing beavers, these are all restoration activities that are hardly funded at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting in the so-called Southwest Jemez Project, another about 100,000-acre project near Jemez Springs. They did an environmental impact statement, you know, a really detailed analysis. They're not doing that here. And that more detailed analysis included those restoration activities. So they're not talking or only talking about cutting trees here. And I think that's a real problem. It doesn't get at some of the core issues on the forest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jim?
And it's a waste of every precious tree. I mean, one tree, if you look at one tree that's maybe 16 inches in diameter, that tree provides the enough oxygen for four people, as well as the fact that many of the trees in this whole region that they're calling the watershed, the fireshed, and then all these organizations are doing various projects in there. That area of trees, that beautiful 107,000 acres, provides so much, not only recreation, but air that we breathe. Those trees have also been sopping up and storing DDT and mercury and plutonium for years. So guess what? When you burn those trees, that's the smoke that all of our friends are coughing about. That's what you see every day. You look at the mountains and they look milky. Someone said to me, oh, I must have cataracts. The mountains look so milky to me these days. No, it's the smoke. Mm-hmm. We're living in a smoke-filled realm. Now there are numerous articles out, and some of there's several called Your Brain on Smog. And what they're saying is that a lot of dementia seems to be caused by particulate matter. That means the smoke that we're breathing. Mm-hmm. Which happens to, I mean, it doesn't even have to include plutonium and mercury and DDT to give us dementia. Just plain smoke gives us dementia. And here we are breathing so much of it every day, practically, with all of the burns that are happening. So this area is a huge storage bank for so many toxins, including the carbon that they're holding. And if they cut them down and then they either masticate them or burn them, neither of those are going to produce anything. They say restoring the forest and, oh, Jan, you're going to like it. We're going to make it into meadows. No, I'm not. It's not about whether I like meadows or not. I do not want to sacrifice the forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we've learned so much about forests over, you know, the last 30 years or so that I've been involved in these kinds of issues. All the trees are connected by this network, this underground network of by the common name, the wood wide web. And actually, trees are communicating with each other. And when the Forest Service is proposing to cut down 97% of the trees, some of those trees are the future trees of the forest. They're resistant to the bark beetle. They're resistant to diseases. They're more drought tolerant. They will be the genes. They have the genes of the future forest. Now, a forester can't tell when he cuts down a tree if that future tree is going to provide the seed stock for a future forest. But the so-called mother trees, the node trees, do. When, like, for example, when a ponderosa or let's say a Douglas fir is dying in the forest, it's transferring its food, its carbon, to the healthiest seedling, and it's connected to hundreds of seedlings. That is the forest evolutionarily protecting itself and adapting to this changing climate. That's why this removal of so many of these smaller trees, these seedlings and saplings, really is contrary to evolution.
Mm-hmm. And also, I imagine, I mean, I like meadows. Nothing against meadows, but this kind of removing 97% of the trees, that's very disruptive. There's a whole ecosystem there. There are many animals that probably absolutely depend on those kind of densities for their livelihood, or many of them live in those trees that are coming down. Are they trying to recreate something that should be there if it weren't for human impact, or are they recreating, turning this in from native forest into a park?
Well, you know, it's just a matter of perspective, Zuby, here. Let me just give one example. So one of the first things I want to do is clear cut this aspen stand, a stand that's dominated by aspen that's right adjacent to the Black Canyon campground. So there's an overstory of older aspen that's in decline and an understory of conifers, white fir and Doug fir, that's underneath. They see that as a sick stand. They see that as something that needs to be regenerated. The aspen's dying. We got to bring the aspen back. But if you're a biologist, especially if you're an ornithologist, that is the best bird habitat on the forest. We have documented over 60 species of birds, including the spotted owl, northern goshawk, and other rare species. So going in there and, you know, so what they're proposing is to clear cut 60 acres to regenerate the aspen. So, you know, they think from a forestry perspective, which is basically based on agriculture, you know, there's good trees, there's bad trees. An ecologist would say, no, no, the whole thing is good. And you have to look at not just the vegetation, but the wildlife that is dependent upon that vegetation. So, you know, I don't know, my dad was a forester, so we would have a lot of these conversations in the forest, and you know, he you know, drank the Kool-Aid. He was certainly in the agricultural perspective on the way that he looked at forests, but toward the end of his life, he started to see in a more larger perspective, and we had some very good discussions. But it's a matter of where you're coming from, you know, the values you have and the perspective you take for forests.
But also, how many people in Santa Fe have enjoyed the aspen? How many tourists come here just for that season? Recently, mm-hmm. I had some friends in town who were from Australia. They were artists. They came here to photograph the beauty. They wanted the vista and the beauty and the landscape. There was so much smoke in the air. One of them had to go to the doctor. He couldn't breathe. The other one was coughing and sneezing. They every time they took out their camera, they were like, "Oh, it's so smoky. The picture's not worth taking," right? So, I mean, to say nothing about the tourists, what about those of us who live here? Haven't we all enjoyed the aspen? Haven't we all enjoyed them very much? Do we really want them all cut down because somebody has an idea about how they think they should regenerate? And the timing of it, I think the aspens are doing, you know, they're doing very well for themselves. I don't want to see them cut down and then burned or turned into masticated chips.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a good point, Jan. So that huge, beautiful aspen stand that we all enjoy so much in the fall, that huge stand was a result of three enormous fires that happened in the 1890s. So aspen regenerates after fire. The above ground portion of aspen is quite short lived. Maybe the tree lives 100 years, but the below ground is one of the oldest living things on the planet. There's a stand of aspen in Utah that's 80,000 years old. Mm-hmm. So that's again, so the long term underground rhizomes of the aspen are incredibly long lived, and it regenerates from those very hot fires the Forest Service is trying to control. Of course, they will not control it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're going to need to go to a quick break. This is Zuby Wilson here on Living on the Edge on KSFR 101.1 FM, broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Community College. I have with me in studio today Jan Boyer and Sam Hitt, and we're talking a little bit about some of the thinning that's planned for this fall up in the area between the Santa Fe watershed and out towards Pecos. And if people are interested in finding out more, the website for you guys is the...
There are numbers of them.
Okay.
There's onceaforest.org. There's the Santa Fe Forest Coalition.org.
Yeah.
There's Wild Waters.
No.
Okay. And there are other ones all across the country. There are many websites right now that are like StopThinningForests.org in Colorado. There are numerous websites popping up all over where people are saying, wait a second, we want to have a voice before all the trees are gone.
And when we come back, we're going to talk more about that voice and why... Why we're not hearing more about this, and why there is not a full environmental impact statement being done. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Donating your car, truck, van, SUV, boat, motorcycle, ATV, RV, trailer, or airplane to KSFR is fast, easy, and efficient. Simply call 833-300-5737 for information and to arrange a pickup of your tax-deductible donation. The number to call is 833-300-5737.
Enchanting treasures abound at the 27th Annual El Dorado Studio Tour, Saturday and Sunday, May 19th and 20th from 10 to 5. The weekend kicks off with an artist reception at the Max Call Community Center, 16 Avenida Torreon, on Friday, May 18th from 5 to 7. The center remains open Saturday and Sunday, where you can preview artwork and pick up brochures and maps. More information at eldoradostudiotour.org, a message from the nonprofit El Dorado Arts and Crafts Association.
And we're back. This is Zuby Wilson here on Living on the Edge on KSFR 101.1 FM, broadcasting live on the web at ksfr.org. And today we're interviewing Jan Boyer and Sam Hitt from the the Santa Fe Forest Coalition. And we're talking a little bit about some of the thinning activities that there were actually blocked at least twice in the past, but are planning to move forward this fall up in the area between the Santa Fe watershed going out towards Pecos. So why aren't we hearing more about this? What is the public involvement process in this, and how is that defined?
Excuse me, Zuby. Uh-huh. It's actually all the way from Chupadero up by Tusuki all the way to Glorieta.
Oh, okay.
It's about 10 miles wide.
Okay.
So it's a little bigger than what you had suggested.
Okay.
But anyway, go ahead.
No. So what the public, the two things I really want to focus on for the second half hour is, what is the public involvement process and what do you think it should be? And also, why isn't there a full environmental impact? I mean, if there was an environmental impact statement, certainly that would create an avenue for people to be more involved in participating in this. But how are they, it seems like cutting 97% of the trees out of an area, obviously there's an impact, right? So how is that, why is there not a full environmental impact statement being done?
Well, you have to back up a little bit and look at the law that authorizes an environmental impact statement. It's called the National Environmental Policy Act. It's passed in 1970. It's our environmental Magna Carta. It gives citizens a right to participate to the fullest extent possible. That's a quote, to the fullest extent possible in these decisions that affects our public lands. The Congress has been at war with NEPA, or the National Environmental Policy Act, for some time. They think it involves too much time, too much delay, and they don't, you know, citizens being at the table is troublesome. We bring a lot of issues that they would like to ignore. So especially this Congress, in fact, there's a bill in the House right now that is just about ready to come out of committee. In fact, I think it did come out of committee, and it's about ready to be voted on by the full House, that would allow them to do these kinds of treatments over 6,000 acres without doing any detailed environmental analysis. So that would be done under what they call a categorical exclusion. That's what they used to do when they would mow the lawn at the ranger station. This is just outrageous. It's the policy of the Trump administration. So, I mean, is delay a bad thing? I think we need to step back and take a hard look at our whole approach to forests, given this new research that we mentioned earlier, and take a look at the role of fire in these ecosystems and what is really at risk. Is it the forest, or is it the people living in the forest? Is it the wildlife? Is it the watershed quality? These are serious questions. There's a lot of good science that needs to be examined, and taking time to do it is essential to protecting our public lands. So, why this is happening? I think that's a good question. You know, government is not trusted. There's this libertarian view that, you know, we just have to rush out and do things quickly without taking hard looks at the impacts.
But as one forester said to me, we're doing it this way because we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Congress sort of gave him a get-out-of-jail-free pass. That's true. But they don't have to do that. They could take a hard look and say, you know, we should really sit back and do an environmental impact statement. So on the issue of delay, you know, this Hyde Park project's been proposed first in 2005, you know, and then in 2006, and then in 2011, and finally we're at 2018, and, you know, they still have not done anything on the ground. So where is the delay? I mean, I think if they really sat back and did a serious environmental impact statement like they did in the Southwest Jemez project, things would happen much faster and we get much better results.
So there's also the issue of the local involvement. For years I went to Forest Service meetings, but I began to realize that when I would go to these meetings, there may be two or three public people there and maybe 30 people or 40 people who were on the payroll of either the Forest Service or the BLM or some nonprofit that was doing the cutting and burning. And I realized, oh, there are two civilians here and everybody else is on the payroll. And then they would want me to listen for minimum hour and a half, usually 2 hours, before anyone from the public was allowed to speak or ask a question. Even now, there was a meeting recently, and we talked about what's the agenda. Well, you have to listen for 2 hours or an hour and a half before you can speak or ask a question. Well, you know what? When there's a meeting at 5:30, and people bring themselves out after a long day at the office, and then they have to listen for an hour and a half to propaganda before they can even ask a question, that's not full involvement of the public. When I talk to people on the street and they say, oh, aren't they just cleaning up the floor of the forest? No. How could it be so poorly understood? Well, it's because it's hardly been in the newspaper except when a few articles slip through that are explaining this to the public. So the public doesn't know what's happening. When we stand on a corner handing out flyers, if we have a sign that says, stop burning our forest, almost every single person who goes by, and I'm talking about hundreds of people who have gone by when we've done these things, they all yell, yes, stop the burns. We love what you're doing. Stop them. Stop them. And you talk to these people and they say, you don't even have to tell us any more information. We just want them to stop. This mm-hmm. is toxic. It's mm-hmm. not good. Besides which, they can burn 1,000 acres of trees in one day. And how many hundreds of years went into building that forest? Now the authorities around the world say these forests are not coming back. The trees cannot come back because of climate change. And so they may pretend that we'll have a nice meadow with nice little trees. No, it's devastating the forest, and it's not going to come back. If it does, it's going to be pretty miserable because, as he says, this is an organism. If you cut down 98% of it, it's going to be very difficult for the remainder to live.
Mm-hmm. And tree root systems form great sponges that are able to hold tremendous amount of water and store that for later times. To completely eliminate that will make a major change in the environment.
I mean, just think about it. If you take down 98% of the trees on these mountains, what do you think is going to happen to our thin topsoil? It is going to fall off. Even the Forest Service admits that these projects cause lots of erosion. So most of the current scientists say, hey, it's not so useful to cause more erosion, to open it up to more wind and drying sun. These things are just not useful even in preventing wildfire. It turns out that forest land that has burned once is more likely to burn again, not less likely to burn again. So, you know, they really need to start looking at some of the current research that says this is not useful, and they need to find something else to do about, as he says, the funding issues, so that it's not, oh, I have to complete this project so that I can retire, which is what one forester said to me. So here are these meetings. the public is not being very involved at all. One time I went to a meeting, and then afterwards I read the report, and they said they had 29 comments from the public. I was the only one speaking. Mm-hmm. I made 29 comments. That does not mean that there was full public involvement in that meeting.
Mm-hmm. Or were they possibly counting some of the people who were there to bid on the project?
No,
because they're the public to them, right? So interesting. And so is there a middle ground here? Is there some amount of thinning that you think would be all right, or is it no thinning at all? Is that where should we go? Because obviously, to me, 98% of the trees is going to make a massive change in the entire environment up there.
Before we go to suggesting how much thinning or prescribed burns there should be, I'd rather see them follow the process that's required by law, namely NEPA, and give mm-hmm. the public a chance to be involved. Later on, we can determine what might be useful. They can suggest, oh, there are alternative plans. Think about this. But that's for later on. Right now, we need to slow them down because they say, hey, we can do 10,000 acres before you can snap your fingers. Mm-hmm. Well, 10,000 acres of trees? How many? All right, remember, 5 tons of carbon per acre. Do we really want to be breathing that mm-hmm. without thinking about it?
Well, back in the day, so under NEPA, they have to do alternatives. And so everyone has a chance, theoretically, to propose alternatives. Often it's just the Forest Service does the alternatives, and it's just various shades of what they want to do anyways. But let's say citizens really had a voice. Let's say NEPA really worked. And we were involved to the fullest extent possible. And we proposed a citizens' alternative. In fact, we did this over 10 years ago. I think it has some basis. I would make some changes now. But, it really centered around a concept called contour felling, or putting the smaller trees on the slopes, perpendicular to the slopes, staked on the downhill side, backfilled on the uphill side, arranged in a shingle pattern on the slopes to hold the soil in place. It's kind of a permaculture idea. And the Forest Service says, oh my goodness, that's like gardening. That's too much labor. Well, that's what was done commonly in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And it put people to work. It involved skilled labor. And it had tremendous benefits of keeping soil on steep slopes in place. There are a lot of steep slopes in the Hyde Park area, as there are in the watershed. They want to put these big machines in there called masticators. Mm-hmm. Those are tracked vehicles that are incredibly destructive. They take the tree and they just shred it, and it causes gigantic amounts of noise. And it just reduces the tree to a bunch of shreds. A much more careful way to do it, as we proposed, was based on contour felling. So I'm not sure that's the best thing to do, but at least it's something that could be evaluated compared to other alternatives, including no action, which mm-hmm. is mandated by law. And an honest comparison could be done, including looking at the various scientific opinions on its effectiveness. So,
So this was stopped in 2005, 2011. So how is it going forward again now? What's the big change that's allowing them to move forward at this point?
It's a Trump administration.
Okay,
it's their it's their modus operandi, gut environmental laws and basically destroy the forest, in order to save it. Mm-hmm. that's their bottom line. So, it's rushing forward. The Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, which the Forest Service is under the Department of Agriculture. It's mm-hmm. He was out here and he was pushing this project in particular. I actually had a chance to talk to him very, very briefly. I mentioned the wilderness quality of the land and the importance of the National Environmental Policy Act. And, well, he said something that was incomprehensible but hostile. Mm-hmm. So that's why this thing is going forward. Basically, the only avenue we have left to us is to go to federal court. Mm-hmm. And we are seriously considered that option. People might not think that's a solution, but that's the only thing left after all these years. And
although we've noticed that sometimes when enough public people are involved, they do sometimes make very slight changes in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
So please tell your neighbors, if you care at all about this forest, remember they can burn down or cut down 1,000 acres in a day. And how many years' growth is that for you, that you might have liked to have saved for your grandchildren?
Mm-hmm. And what you said earlier, I mean, that there's going to be people going out bidding on this project. I guess one of the concerns I have is the ability to take care and try to leave and limit erosion. I mean, are these kinds of things being included in the bid sets, or is it just get in there and cut it down? And is there any part of it that would require people to do a good job of trying to control erosion and try to mitigate impact at all?
They say no money for that when I spoke to them.
You know, I'm so glad you asked that question, because if they had done an environmental impact statement, those so-called mitigation measures or controlling soil loss, protecting water quality, wildlife habitat, those measures would be mandatory under an environmental impact statement. Now, under this so-called categorical exclusion, they're discretionary. They can do them if they want or not do them if they want. It's really criminal.
So they are getting funding, so they're just choosing not to spend the funding that they have on that aspect of the project?
It's, you know, the environmental analysis is not expensive. They have plenty of money to do it. In their view, they would say, oh, it would take too much time. Mm-hmm. But how much time has elapsed, you know? And if they did, if they followed the law as intended, involved the public, did the alternatives, made the mitigation measures mandatory, there would be much less controversy. The public would have a voice. I think we'd get a much more comprehensive project, like replanting riparian areas, closing roads, reintroducing beavers, very important for water quality.
And using goats around houses to clean up the trash,
floor. Some of these good ideas.
It seems to be very useful and effective. And that's one of the things suggested by the Physicians for Social Responsibility, as well as by other big organizations.
You know, I'd like to get into a little bit of the weeds here, if that's
sure.
Okay.
We've got about 10 minutes.
Yeah, this has to do with the whole element of risk. You know, what is the risk of a fire that they're trying to stop, these hot, climate-driven crown fires like happened in Las Conchas? They're very worried about those, and of course those are incredible events. So let's just for the moment accept their premise, this is the Forest Service, that their treatments, they're reducing these tree numbers such a great deal, will actually stop that kind of fire. I don't believe that's true, but let's just for the sake of argument accept that. What's the chance of their treatment of one of these climate-driven fires reaching an area like Hyde Park in the approximately 10 to 15 years in which these treatments are effective? It's less than 0.1%. So this project is going to cost close to $1 million. And it's a time-limited effectiveness. And it's the same thing in the watershed as well, the 7,000 acres they've done there. So even if you accept their premise that their treatments would be effective in stopping these climate-driven fires, the chance of one of these fires reaching an area like Hyde Park in the 10 years or so that their treatments would be effective is vanishingly small. And this is, you know, just, you know, you raise these points with the Forest Service, you just get this blank stare. I don't think they're dumb. I think they're, many of them are good intention, but these are fundamental problems that have been pointed out by researchers for years. In fact, there's a new Forest Service document coming out of California that makes the same argument. It's much more convoluted language, but it has to do with risk and effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of abstract concepts, but very, very important when we're talking about our public lands.
So let's get another announcement out. You're going to be taking a tour so people can go up and see there, and that is?
Right. That'd be the Saturday after Memorial Day.
Okay, so Saturday after Memorial Day, that will be the 2nd, or is that the 9th?
It's the 2nd of July.
It's the 2nd.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you.
So June 2nd, and where will people meet for that?
Let's see. That will be, we'll meet at Black Canyon Campground right mm-hmm. there at the public parking lot, which is right adjacent to the road.
My favorite place to go gathering mushrooms right there.
There's great, yes, it's a great place. And it's also a great place to watch birds.
Yeah. So if people want to do something, I mean, I hate having shows and talk about something so depressing and not, what should people do? What
okay.
can people do to become involved and to help, you know, let their public officials know, or how can people get involved in this?
Well, I'll go first real quick. And, you know, it's really our politicians, our senators and congressmen. So Senator Martin Heinrich, Senator Tom Udall, and Congressman Ben Ray Lujan. Simply pick up the phone and give them a call. Say, you know, we need an environmental impact statement on this larger area, which the Forest Service calls a fire shed. That's not a word, really, but let's just use that word so they understand what we're talking about. And please ensure that they do that environmental impact statement that will involve the public, evaluate a range of alternatives, make the mitigation measures mandatory, et cetera, et cetera. They can go to our website to get a little bit more informed, but that's really all they have to do. It won't be the first time that our senators or congressmen have heard this message, but the more times they hear it from their citizen, their people that vote, the more likelihood that it will happen.
And do they have a position on this right now, or are they?
You know, Senator Heinrich is running for re-election this mm-hmm. year, and there'll be a number of public forums, and mm-hmm. you can just show up at these forums and ask him.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, he's been quite evasive about this issue. He's voted in the right way on a number of occasions, but when it comes down to this particular project on the Santa Fe National Forest, he has not taken a hard stand, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Well, Jane, why don't you go ahead and share the...
Well, I want to urge people to also go to these websites, inform yourself so that you can talk to your neighbors and begin to inform the public so that people know what's happening. People seem to be very frightened. Well, aren't they saving us from the big wildfire? No, that's not a correct assumption. People need to learn. They can read all kinds of research on our websites and inform themselves, talk to their neighbors, talk to their friends, and make these calls. Write letters to the editor if you have any concern. If you like to hike in the woods, you might want to write a letter to the editor and say so, because people don't know that these woods are going away if we don't do something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very important. And, you know, it is important, especially with Senator Heinrich running for office. It's a great opportunity, and I'm certain he'll be very accessible for the next few months. So it'd be a great opportunity for people to get in there and talk to him a little more about that. Now, so the Forest Service could choose to do the full impact statement. They were choosing not to. So that's where an individual member of Congress can have some discretion to put pressure on within their own state to choose, you know, either choose to do the full impact statement or choose to include some environmental mitigation as a part of the bid set when they go out. So there's a lot of things that could happen that short of maybe exactly what you want as well.
No, we just want an open process that looks at all the science, not just selectively at the science that supports the Forest Service project.
There are so many issues. I mean, it's very complicated, but there's so much money involved here. About over a year ago, they passed a law saying that if a fire was more than 300 acres, then they could get unlimited funding. Well, funniest thing, after that happened, guess what? Every single fire turned into something more than 300 acres. Even if it was only a lightning strike, it was managed, as they say, by adding backburns and containment lines to being over the limit in terms of, okay, well, then they could get unlimited funding. When one of these projects came before the city council, actually, the fire department guy said, somebody asked, well, what is the purpose of this particular burn? He said, one of the issues is to have our fire department people have experience setting fires. Well, that is not a good use of wasting trees that may have taken hundreds of years to grow just so they have practice, in my humble opinion. That's not a good use of our trees. So I think there are a lot of issues here, and if people begin to delve into it and look at what's really going on here, they're going to be asking some very tough questions about, do we really, how much of Santa Fe's charm, how much of the forest bathing, as they talk about, if we lose that, what are we going to have left? Mm-hmm. If we don't have that backdrop anymore, and if we've got smoke, as one of them said, oh, Jan, stop worrying about it. We're going to burn for 20 years. Really? Is that what the public wants?
You know, I'd like just to make one other request out there. If there are any experienced birders listening, we would love to get your assistance to document the bird populations in Hyde Park. We've already done 3 breeding bird surveys since the early 2000s, and we need to do one this spring. And we'd love to have you involved.
So birders?
Yes, people who go out and enjoy our wonderful breeding birds, yeah.
That sounds like a wonderful thing. So give me your website one more time again.
So it's the SantaFeForestCoalition.org.
And onceaforest.org.
Cool. And so people go there, they can get some of the most updated research. So when you go and talk to your representative, you're armed with some of the cutting edge latest science about what could and should be done. And I think it's very important. The thing that you're really pushing here isn't a solution, it's a process. You're interested in just a broader, more inclusive process that could really look at the ultimate environmental impacts. And if there is going to be thinning, the forest will be taken care of, not just left to try to hopefully recover itself.
Correct.
Well, thank you both so very much for all your hard work. Thanks for coming in today. This is Zuby Wilson
here on
Living on the Edge on KSFR 101.1 FM. And we've had wonderful with us Jan Boyer and Sam Hitt talking about the upper watershed. So we'll be back next week with the Santa Fe Institute. The news